Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the program. Especially want to welcome all the deplorables that have decided to join us for the program today. I don't know if you're in a basket or not, but deplorables, the basket of deplorables made famous by ex-presidential candidate Hillary Clinton. Welcome, everybody, to today's issues on the American Family Radio Network. I am Tim Wildman. Evan Tagliano is not here today, and so we will be joined by Fred Jackson, news director for American Family News and OneNewsNow.com. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning, fellow deplorables.
It's so, you know, but you know the deplorables—they have a spring in their step now.
That's right.
Yeah. They it's a new day in our country.
And at last count, what, they're 60 million plus? Oh, that's a bunch of deplorables.
That's a bunch of deplorables. Walker Wildman, who's our digital manager over here, handling our Facebook page. Walker, good morning.
Good morning.
What are you going to do for us today, Walker?
Today, I'm going to do what I do every day, and that is we got our Facebook Live up and running. We only have 12 viewers now, so we need to up that. We need to get more people watching Facebook Live. Go to Today's Issues Facebook page, and then also be posting the articles that we talk about.
All right, so if you go to Facebook page, Facebook Live, you can watch the show?
Yes, go to the Today's Issues Facebook page and you can watch our show live.
Okay, and you're going to post all the stories we talk about?
Yes, every last story we talk about will be on the Facebook page.
Okay, all right. And so much to talk about on the show today. By the way, David Barton will be with us in just a few minutes. Nobody knows the ins and outs of politics like David Barton. And, of course, David's well known for American history and their Christian heritage from Wall Builders, and we'll talk to David in just a few minutes. And then George Barna on with us next hour, right, Walker?
Yes, George Barna will be on to talk about one of his recent surveys.
So you know, George Barna can break down how the election went, who where the Christian vote went, and break that all down for us, and mm-hmm. we can talk to him about that. Fred, did you see the 60 Minutes interview with Donald Trump last night?
I have seen excerpts from it, yeah. What he was talking about. He had his whole family there at least one point during the interview.
Leslie Stahl was the interviewer. And I guess Donald Trump is going to, President-elect Donald Trump is going to give the media a chance. By the media, that's a broad term, but I mean, I can just see if he, you know, doesn't like the way they treat him, he will not do another interview with them in the future.
Yeah.
That's kind of the way he's...
Well, what it proved to him all the way along is that he can win an election with or without the mainstream media, mm-hmm. and right. they know that. There are some now in the media who say, you know, enough is enough. We can cry all we want about this because we know the mainstream media was in the pocket of Hillary Clinton during the election campaign. But there are at least some honest journalists out there, some important ones.
Yeah.
Article from CBS that you have in front of you there, who say, okay, let's just stop. We blew it. Let's just step back and find out what we have to do to earn some credibility with the American people. They are admitting they got it wrong. A lot of these mainstream media said Hillary has it in the bag. You know, she's got this. And they wrote the stories with that angle throughout the election campaign, and it still didn't work out for Hillary Clinton. Mm-hmm. So they're looking at this and they're saying there are things that we missed, obviously. And I think the thing they missed is that there's at least half of America that they don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a column on CBS. Are you going to post this one, Walker?
Yes, sir.
All right, there's an excellent analysis of the election by a gentleman who works for CBS News. His name is Will Rain, R-A-H-N. And Walker's going to post this column that this fellow wrote on our Facebook page for today's issues. But
I think he's one of the chief political editors for CBS.
Yeah, he is the is a political correspondent and managing director for politics for CBS News Digital.
Yeah.
Anyway, what he said was, it was a fascinating column. He's saying that here's the headline commentary, the unbearable smugness of the press.
Wow.
And what he's saying is that the press treated Trump supporters like they were backwoods, uneducated, rednecks, yahoos, racists, mm-hmm. bigots, homophobes, and every other phobe you can think of. And that's how the press treated Trump and his supporters, and it backfired on them because it only led people to want to vote for Trump that much more because they were tired of being portrayed as uneducated. Mm-hmm. And what's fascinating was the college educated, remember that's what they said, mm-hmm. college educated.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to be college educated. That doesn't prove you're smart necessarily.
Right.
Or dumb. Mm-hmm. But that's what they were gauging. These people who are college educated will not vote for Donald Trump. Well, they did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, the problem with the media is that they believe their own lies sometimes, and they go out and talk to people who already agree with them, and that's what you see on your CBS and ABC and NBC News every night. They go out and try to find people who agree with them. And when I say with them, the journalists. And so you get this really warped sense of a country that just is not representing the truth.
Listen to a paragraph from this column. Again, this is by a fellow who works for CBS News, and he's doing a self-examination of the media's treatment of Trump and the campaign and his supporters. And he's critical of this is why this column is impressive. It's critical of the media, of his liberal media
colleagues.
And he said one of the things is he says that's the fantasy, the idea that if we mock them enough, call them racist enough, they'll eventually shut up and get in line.
Mm-hmm.
It's similar to how media Twitter works, a system where people who dissent from the proper framing of a story are attacked by mobs of smugly, incredulous pundits. Journalists exist primarily in a world where people can get shouted down and disappear, which informs our attitudes towards all disagreement. Anyway, he's talking about that first line, sentence kind of caught my attention. The idea that if we mock them enough, that is the Trump, middle America, call them racist enough, they'll eventually shut up and get in line. You know, the interesting thing is basically the quote mainstream liberal news media, who has, I guess their influence now is diminished greatly because they couldn't bring down Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
They basically live in a liberal bubble of Washington, New York, and Hollywood. And the rest of the country is flyover.
It's what it is. And yeah. I've mentioned this before, Tim.
Where the little people live who don't know anything.
They, you know, the mainstream media loves to talk about diversity, but they have no diversity when it comes to worldview in their newsrooms.
Mm-hmm.
So when...
Right, that's a good point. And you lived in that world for a while.
I lived in that world for 20 years.
Right.
And, you know, they have diversity when it comes to ethnic things, but in those newsrooms, they want people to think the way they do. They want people who are pro-abortion. They want people who, when Barack Obama says, hey, there's global warming out there, man-made global warming, they want people who agree with that. And that, so that they're not even going to talk to others who have a different opinion about that, like Donald Trump. Or they just paint them in their stories as being wackos.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happened on election night, they realized there's a whole constituency out there of university professors, some of them, college grads, and others right down the line, the economic lines, that say, no, this is not true. And so the mainstream media, for the most part, are in shock. They're in shock. And much like the DNC, the Democratic National Committee, that's out there today, and that's another story in the news. They're looking for new leadership. But the thing is, if they go with the same kind of people, they're going to find themselves in the same kind of trouble 2 years from now and 4 years from now. It is. I applaud this journalist at CBS for taking an honest look at the problem. They have dismissed at least half of the American population. And they're now saying we can't do that. And we were discussing in our meeting this morning, Tim, these mainstream networks, ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, and others, if for no other reason, they ought to come around and really have diversity of thought and thinking in their newsroom because they're losing money. These mainstream networks, their audiences are depleting all the time. The New York Times are losing readers all the time because people are fed up with their left-wing bias.
Yeah, now you're right. And anyway, good for we did post that column.
Mm-hmm.
It's called The Unbearable Smugness of the Press. It's on our Facebook page for today's issues here on American Family Radio. Hey, did you see what this Pepsi CEO said?
Mm-mm.
Do you know anything about this?
Mm-mm.
Did you hear about this, Brent? It's a Pepsi CEO. I'm looking at an article from BizPackReview.com. So I wanted to make sure this is not phony or bogus. Pepsi CEO, all right, said this. pardon me. The Pepsi CEO, her name is, I'll get her name in just a minute. She said, her name is INDRANOOYI. I'm not sure how you pronounce that. But she's talking about the election between Trump and Clinton. She said this, I had to answer a lot of questions from my daughters, from my employees. They were all in mourning. She's saying this publicly now. This is a company that depends on people to buy their product. She said this publicly. She said in New York City at a conference hosted by CNBC on Thursday, she said, our employees, this is the CEO of Pepsi now. She said, our employees are all crying. And the question that they are asking, especially those that are not white, are we safe?
Oh, my.
Women are asking, the drama is me, folks. Women are asking, are we safe? LGBT people are asking, are we safe? I never thought I'd have to answer those questions, end of quote. Anyway, it says that the CEO of Pepsi was a staunch supporter of Hillary Clinton. And I'm just reading here the story, and it's basically about, I mean, that, you know, you don't say those kind of things if you're the CEO of a company where you depend on people to buy your product. I think you stay out of politics as much as possible, but you certainly don't make these kind of comments. I don't think it's good for them.
Well, that article represents her thinking. I'm amazed at the extreme naivete of this person that
this is a CEO of PepsiCo.
They would take these concerns. You know, if you're the CEO, you would say to these people, why are you worried about your future? Did he really say anything that affects your future?
Yeah, her name is INDRA. That's her first name, and her last name is NOOYI. She's a Pepsi CEO. It's just this whole thing about safe. Are we safe? Is just I don't get it. It sounds so. Can I use the expression whiny baby? it just is. Are we safe? What? As if President-elect Trump is going to, I don't know what he said that makes these people feel, quote, unsafe. Now, he did say, okay, I want to return to this later because his comments when he first said build a wall about Mexico is not sending us their finest.
Mm-hmm.
Some are rapists, some are murderers, some are drug dealers. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
That's what he got in trouble for, and that's what that's still what a lot of these left-wing groups are citing as a reason to compare Trump to Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
But we can revisit that in a minute. I wanted to talk to David Barton. First, David is founder of Wall Builders, and he's ran a pack for Ted Cruz. Didn't you, David?
I sure did. Yeah, I sure did.
Yeah, and a lot of our listeners supported Ted Cruz. I know we surveyed at one time, I think between 55 and 60% of our folks who listen to American Family Radio and read onenewsnow.com were back to Cruz, but they, you know, wasn't enough. Cruz fell to, as did all of them, to Donald Trump in the end on the Republican side. But you switched over. You supported Donald Trump in the end, didn't you?
I did. Yeah, I switched over. Well, I'm the same thing as 57% of the electorate. I supported Donald Trump with a very strong dislike for Hillary.
So Hillary was the best campaigner for Trump for you.
She was. Well, it's interesting. In the election, the exit polls showed that only 41% of voters strongly supported their candidate. So there was not strong support for either.
Yeah.
And in both cases, it was more of who, you know, Democrats are scared of Trump, and Republicans and independents. And independents overwhelmingly went for Trump. It was pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But the independents and Republicans were scared of Hillary, and the Democrats are scared of Trump. So in the election, 57% of those who voted for Trump did so because of Hillary. You had 41% who did so because of who Trump was.
Well, I tell you what.
I was kind of in the group with the rest of them.
Yeah, David, I tell you what. For me, the number one issue for Donald Trump, the reason he got my vote, and I think perhaps I speak for a lot of our listeners and probably the majority of the Christian community who came out for Donald Trump, even though they had a problem with his personal behavior, we all did, even he did. He said he was embarrassed by it. That tape from 11 years ago, namely that, but some other things that he's said and done, the way he's behaved on the campaign trail, we're not becoming of a presidential candidate. But that's, you know, the American people factored that in. But the point is, the main point to me was the Supreme Court of the United States and the federal court system in general, the judge, because the president appoints federal judges all over the land, whoever the president is. And then with the Supreme Court, David, the Supreme Court was about to be lost to the secular progressive left for a generation had Hillary Clinton won. And I think that's a lot of Christians said, you know what, we can't risk. I may not like Donald Trump's behavior, but the guy says he's going to appoint pro-life judges, and he's going to and conservative justices to the Supreme Court, and I've got to go with him on that. It's just too important to risk losing. Did you think that had a big role?
I was very, very shocked at the exit polls. Judges did not have a big role. And for those who said judges is the number one issue, that was 21% of folks. And or they said judges is a very important issue. They didn't say it's number one. You know what the number one issue was in the voting? Number one issue was 48% of voters said we want a more conservative America. I thought that was an absolute massive number, considering all the things that were out there. But 21% of voters didn't say the number one issue, but 21% of voters said, yeah, having a Supreme Court is very, very, very important to me. And in that area, Trump just cleaned house. But there was about 40% of voters who said, Supreme Court is pretty important to me. And of those who thought it was pretty important, it split evenly between Hillary and Trump, which was real surprising to me. So that, you know, that meant the pro-abortion people are out on their side and the moderate pro-lifers on ours. But only 21%, but of those that said Supreme Court is a big issue.
Yeah, it's only 21%. That's still one out of five.
Oh, and that's one out of five. And that's big. And, you know, it was really interesting. And looking at the categories that Trump carried, I was really surprised by it. For example, Trump did not carry the rich. Hillary carried them by far. Trump carried middle class big time. I did not expect that. And there were some demographics like that that really surprised me. For example, those who voted on the economy thought the economy was the most important issue. They overwhelmingly went for Hillary, not Trump. And I thought Trump would be the one that pulled the economic voters in. So it was a real interesting look. But judges, that is one out of five, but half of the nation wants to see this thing more conservative. And what's interesting, and here's one of the really interesting things to me, was 49% of voters said they were dissatisfied with the Democrat Party, 55% said they were dissatisfied with the Republican Party, but they kept Republicans in power at the state legislature. We grew governors, we grew number of legislators. They were dissatisfied. 48% wanted more conservative. What they were saying is, we're dissatisfied that you're not conservative enough. we think you're the better shot than Democrats, but you're not going far enough.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that the voters really sent a pretty clear message that we expect some very aggressive behavior from our Republicans this time. We're tired of this, you know, death by attrition, thousand cuts stuff. Mm-hmm. We want to push back.
We're talking to David Barton from Wall Builders. David is giving us an analysis and a breakdown of the presidential election. I knew David would have all those numbers to share with us. And Fred, you had a question for David?
Yeah, Fred Jackson here. David, I'm interested in, and they wanted a more conservative country, and I guess we'd have to go to the definition of individuals and what do you mean by conservative. But I think there was that element in there, and you've touched on it. They weren't happy with the established Republican Party. So it goes to what Donald Trump talked about the whole campaign, that what was behind him was a movement that didn't like the GOP establishment, a movement that didn't like the way, obviously, Obama / Hillary Clinton had taken and was going to take the country. They didn't like the mainstream media. So they had a whole bunch of people they didn't like, and they got behind Donald Trump because he didn't like them either.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and you hit on part of it. There were three really big losers in the election. One was establishment, two was major media, and three was the consulting political class, the pollsters, the pundits, the consultants. I mean, there were three huge losers in this thing. And so the people got behind that. I was telling someone just a few minutes ago, this is more like an Andrew Jackson kind of a presidency instead of a John Quincy Adams. In other words, it was back to the popular people. The people felt like they had the White House again. And so that's really very much what's happened here. And that the thing that concerned me with the numbers, however, was even though people want a more conservative America, that does not mean a more moral America.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm seeing a huge divide between conservatism and morals. They voted very conservatively, but 8 of the 9 states that had dope on the ballot said they think smoking dope is a great behavior. Mm. 70% of Colorado said, hey, let's do over-the-counter suicide pills. So there were 154 ballot initiatives. 51 of them dealt with moral issues, and we got a clock clean on moral issues. So the same people that put Trump in and put Republicans in and sent a message, we want more conservatives, they have divorced conservatism from moralism. And what that means is you're going to start looking like Europe. And so we have to get that moral foundation back under this conservative movement. And if we don't do that, we will be like Europe, and that's not a good model to follow.
David, one other thing I want to ask you about. Donald Trump, in his 60-minute interview last night, did not back down. In fact, he reinforced his pro-life position. I've never heard a presidential candidate or now president-elect say openly, I'm going to appoint pro-life judges to the Supreme Court. Usually they're smart enough not to say that. And I mean that as a backhanded compliment. I don't know if that's backhanded or not, but I said this last week. Donald Trump sometimes says things, I don't know if he fully understands them, so he doesn't know enough not to say them. But in this case, he has stood by. I don't know what happened to him. I don't know when he became pro-life exactly, because he's not been that way for most of his life, most of his career. But he's sticking with this, and are you impressed by that?
Yeah, he is. And if you look at the list of people out today, most cabinet-level departments, he now has the top 5 people out that he's going to place in. Mm-hmm. And probably in nearly all categories, 4 of the 5 are our folks, as if I'd written a list in many cases.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the people that would be obscure to most listeners. They would not recognize the names, but I know these guys. I know the names. I know their worldview and philosophy. And it's like somebody from our side is sitting there making the choices. And so and it's what we talked about back when Bush got in 2000. Is, look, you're going to have some moderate establishment kind of folks, but put them over transportation. Put them over commerce. Don't put them over HHS and Attorney General, et cetera. And that's the way it's looking right now.
Hey, David. Got to run, brother. Thanks so much for your time, man.
You bet. Bless you guys. Bye-bye.
Okay. That's David Barton. We'll be back momentarily.
Next time on Today's Issues, it's been a week since the elections, and news is finally turning to the transition instead of the protests.
This is a result, I think, of the everybody gets a trophy mentality.
Right.
I cannot possibly be a loser.
Newsmen Fred Jackson and Steve Jordahl will report on the latest and help us make sense of our changing world. Don't miss Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on AFR, and online at AFR.net.
One of the more emotional times on our tour of Israel is when we go to the house of Caiaphas. This is where Jesus Christ was held the night before his appearance before Pilate. And we see the dungeon where he was held. And it's just a very striking thing to be there knowing our Lord suffered in this way and was treated in this way. That's one of the places we'll visit is the house of Caiaphas, where the trial took place as well. Well, for more information on our tour of Israel and all the places we'll see and all the places we'll go, it's going to be a wonderful time with brothers and sisters from around the country. Our phone number is 800-FAMILIES, 800-FAMILIES, F-A-M-I-L-I-E-S, 1-800-FAMILIES, option 5 for more information. Or if you want to go on the internet, twholyland.com. Go to the website, twholyland.com. Come see the land of the Bible with us in March.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and Commentary next. David Wilcox was just minding his business the other day in Chicago when he got sideswiped. When he got out of his car to exchange insurance information, a mob of teenagers pounced. He was dragged from his car and pummeled as onlookers egged on the beatdown. You voted for Trump! That's what they screamed. That's one of those white boy Trump supporters. Police say there's no indication it was politically motivated, even though the video clearly shows the mob was motivated by politics. So why is it that Mr. Wilcox is not a household name like Michael Brown or Trayvon Martin? Why is it when a white man is dragged from his car by a black mob, the media turns the other way? Why hasn't President Obama condemned the attack? Why is his righteous indignation so selective? His silence as a white man was beaten by a black mob in his hometown does make one wonder. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments at AFR.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at AFR.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Duly noted. Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I'm Tim Wildman with Walker Wildman, keeping our Facebook page going over there. What do you got posted now?
Yeah, now I have both the Pepsi CEO comments where she's wigging out about Trump's election.
Yes.
And then I also have up the commentary, which the article's the commentary is titled "The Unbearable Smugness of the Press."
Yeah,
and the guy self-critiques his own.
I just can't believe this comment by the CEO of PepsiCo. I mean, you would think she would be smart enough to get involved in this. It's post-election, and she's basically having a breakdown.
Yeah,
she said, "quote I had to answer a lot of questions from my daughters." She's a big Hillary supporter. I had to answer a lot of questions from my daughters, from my employees. They were all mourning. It sounds like something to be on Dr. Phil or something. I don't know.
Well,
she says, quote, our employees are all crying. They're all crying. And they're all Pepsi employees are crying, she said. And the question that they were asking is, especially those that are not white, are we safe? Women are asking, are we safe? LGBT. People are asking, are we safe? I never thought I'd have to be answering those questions. Jeremy Wiggins with us on this Monday. Good morning, Jeremy.
Good morning, Tim.
What do you think about the CEO of Pepsi?
Well, somebody just needs to give her a participation trophy and maybe she'll be quiet and just start handing them out to
how
all
about
of
a blanket or something or some
a teddy
a puppy.
Bear.
Like Linus.
Give her a puppy.
Yeah. Like, you know, it just kills me. I talked about this on my program In the Trenches airing Saturday mornings at 6 a.m. I ran down this whole litany list of how is he racist? How is he bigoted? How is he homophobic? Mm-hmm. And I went, you know, like for the LGBT, he let Bruce Jenner use whatever bathroom he wanted at Trump Tower.
Yeah.
He held up an LGBT flag at one of his rallies. Now, we don't agree with him on that, but you have to take a look at it, and you have to say from a common sense
point
of view.
What are you scared of?
What are you scared of?
Well, what they'll say is that the people he's surrounding himself, like Governor Mike Pence of Indiana, for example, and other a list of homophobes, that's what they will say, not necessarily Trump himself. So they're saying that Trump is going to let them run wild in their persecution of LGBT people. That's just scare tactics. I think people like the Human Rights Campaign, the LGBT groups, they need a reason to exist. They need people to write them checks. Mm-hmm. So they're going to fearmonger on this thing. Quite frankly, Trump, we knew this going in, that Trump is, he doesn't have a clear grasp on a lot of the LGBT stuff. Mm-hmm. He's basically a live and let live guy who grew up in New York City.
Yeah.
And most of us are live and let live people. It's only when the LGBT movement and what all they want to impose on us,
right,
and force people to do things that are against their religious convictions, that where the fight comes.
Yeah, and one of the reasons I think they're up in arms over Trump, even though he's really shown no signals of being anti-LGBT anything,
but he
stayed out of it, which I think's smart in a sense. Instead of getting in all that drama, the Supreme Court's already decided on it. But the main reason that they're freaking out is because they want someone who's going to ramrod their agenda down the American
people's
throat.
Right, as Obama has.
Yes, and if they don't have that, then they're not happy.
That's the difference. What Trump's not going to do is ramrod stuff down the throats of Christians.
Yes.
Obama and Hillary would have done that. He did, and she would have. So while Trump may not be a champion of ours necessarily on understanding that is a sin.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's not going to, and the people he's putting in his place is not going to use the federal government to come down on the heads of Christians and promote all this immoral stuff. Mm-hmm. So
Absolutely right, Tim. That kind of goes hand in hand with our first story that we have here. You know, you talk about we're talking about Christians and the understanding of the fact that homosexuality is a sin, and there's a lot of Christians out there who don't understand that. They're biblically illiterate when it comes
to
the fact.
That's what the Christian faith taught for 2,000 years. It's only in the last 10 years that we decided, well, the Bible's incorrect on that teaching.
Well, they decided they knew better than God, and so they went with their gut and their feelings on that. But I got a story out here that's just breaking from the Washington Post about a woman named Glennon Doyle Melton. Now, she is a self-confessed Christian mom blogger, is what she calls herself. She's got 645,000 followers. Over 500,000 people go to this woman on a regular basis. She has just come out over the weekend that she is now in a relationship with celebrity soccer star Abby Wambach, a woman. So this person who says that they are a Christian mother blogger is now in a lesbian relationship.
What's her name?
Her name is Glennon Doyle Melton. She's got 645,000 followers.
Okay.
She tours at, this says in this WAPO article, that she tours Christian events, including mainline Protestant non-denominational churches. She is a member of a United Church of Christ congregation in Naples, Florida, which they advance the—
That's a very liberal denomination.
Mm-hmm. It numbers 5,000 congregations and 1 million members, so there's a lot of people in here. But this is just another example of a person who does not understand the fact that sin and God's word, they don't mix. We have God's word, which explains to us what sin is, but then there's human beings who, in our own flaws and our fallen nature.
You know, the LGBT folks got just about everything they want the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
The military, they're open, can serve openly in the military. They got same-sex marriage passed through the Supreme Court. You know, I just don't see there's a whole lot more to gain.
Right.
Well, it's not about it's.
You'd
about,
be surprised.
They'll be. They will continue.
Well, they want to. For, they want yeah. to make Christians bow. The next step is make Christians bow the knee.
Yes, that's exactly.
Then that
right.
Or maybe the end goal.
Yeah, they want Christians to bow the knee.
Yeah.
Or be driven out of business.
Right.
Or lose your job.
That would be. Mm-hmm. That's end game for them.
Mm-hmm. That's where they want to go with this, mm-hmm. and this is where I think Trump, if he and with the people that he puts in place, although Trump may have shown ambivalence about this issue, I don't think he's promised religious freedom. Promoting religious freedom and protecting religious freedom. And I think if he puts the right people in place, they're going to stop this. For example, this forcing schools across America. You remember this about 2 months ago? The Justice Department for mm-hmm. Obama came out and said, we want that schools across America should make women's restrooms and showers and locker rooms open to transgendered people. Or else we're going to take money away. We're going to take all federal funds away from the schools.
Under Title IX.
Remember that?
Yeah.
Well, now a lot of states are suing the Justice Department over this. And a lot of governors have said, we're not going to do this.
Yeah.
And now that's something that Trump would not do that Obama right. would do. So you see,
yeah.
you see mm-hmm. how that works?
We need a neutral, in a sense, president on issues like that, because what will happen is if you don't have the Justice Department and all these rogue federal judges that Obama appointed coming down and striking down all of these good laws that these states pass, mm-hmm. then we're fine. Just let the right. states right. hash this stuff
yeah.
out.
Well, you know, one set of rights does not outweigh this other set of rights, so they cancel each other out and you let both groups be.
Mm-hmm.
You don't try to, you know, we're talking about the rights of the students who are not transgendered are just as equal and valid as the right of the student who thinks that they are something right. not. So you don't put one necessarily over the other in a fair, neutral setting.
But that's what the
about.
Secular progressives led by President Obama and his Justice Department, for example, wanted to do. They want to force schools to say, no, if a boy feels like he's a girl, he can go shower with the girls. That's what they're promoting,
mm-hmm.
and so this has stopped that. Hopefully, in its tracks, we'll have to wait and see. But President Trump is putting in place personnel around him and people around him who understand this issue, even though he may not. Donald Trump may not understand completely this issue, and who see things the way we do here at American Family Association. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Walker, what do you have posted at our Facebook page now?
Well, I just posted the article that Jeremy spoke briefly about the blogger, the well-known blogger, Christian blogger, who has announced that she is openly engaging in homosexual behavior. And my comment on this is that embracing sin such as homosexuality is not compatible with the Christian faith. It's an oxymoron.
2,000 years Christian teaching has been clear
yeah.
on this, that homosexuality, that is the act
mm-hmm.
of homosexual behavior, is sin.
Right.
It's only recently that we've decided in our...
And we're not saying that someone can't struggle with it. We all have struggles. Some struggle with
yeah.
lying. Some
no,
struggle
no.
with
our
adultery.
God can forgive
yeah.
and help somebody, but we can't call something that God calls sin right.
Right, exactly.
And what the government's wanting to do now is punish Christians who have the view that homosexuality is sin.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you, I'm convinced of this. Had Hillary Clinton become president, with all the people she would put in place and the track we were on, I would have fully expected to get a letter within the next year or two. Dear Mr. Wildman, your radio network will now have to cease from commenting on homosexuality, or you will be fined and or lose your license.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And if you don't think that's happening, just ask our Canadian brethren to the
right.
north
yeah.
what it's like to live under that secular progressive style government for so many years. That's what's happening.
That's where we're headed. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. The the CEO of PepsiCo says that all her employees are crying because President... because Trump was elected president.
I want to see real tears. I want pictures. I don't believe it.
She says all our employees are all crying, and the question that they are asking, especially those that are not white, So she's turned this into a racial thing.
Mm-hmm.
This is unbelievable from a company. I don't know if this woman understands.
It's dumb.
You need people, or you need Republicans and Democrats to buy your product.
Right.
So you don't need to get in the middle of something like this. Mm-hmm. But she's all the employees are crying, and they're asking questions, especially the non-white employees of PepsiCo.
You know what else doesn't make sense, too? If you look at states like California that just passed the sugary drinks tax, which now you have to pay a certain percentage, certain number of cents per ounce on sugary drinks, why would a company like Pepsi not look at progressive their ideology own, and go, hey, wait a minute.
Their own policies are working against themselves.
Exactly. The people are going to drink less soda now.
It's just
now.
Like San Francisco a couple months ago, the city council proposed a 15% payroll tax on all the big wig companies in California like PayPal and stuff. Well, that liberal policy works directly against the CEOs that have been promoting liberal policies.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's not the CEOs who get affected. It's the your mainline, right. Your bottom worker, your janitor, your factory mm-hmm. worker. It's them who will lose their jobs first before the CEO might not get as big a bonus.
Right.
But that's why I think they feel so comfortable pushing these agendas.
I'm just stunned at this. President CEO Indra, N-O-O-Y-I. Is her last name, and she says that all her employees are crying and they're asking questions, especially if you're not white. You ask questions if you're not white. She says, are we safe?
Man, the media acts like being white's a sin.
Well,
that's what they that's well, how they that, label all the Trump supporters.
Well, that's a way to divide the country. That's right. What they're trying to do. She said women, and they also play this card, women are asking, are we safe, says the CEO of Pepsi. LGBT people are asking, are we safe?
As if Donald Trump's going to go door-to-door harassing people, you yeah. know? I mean, like, what? Seriously?
Well, I don't know. This stuff isn't working much anymore, this name-calling mm-hmm. stuff. I think people are tired of it. Donald Trump won, I want to say 13% of the male African-American vote. He won 30-something percent of his Latino vote. Mm-hmm. Am I right?
Yep.
So maybe this name-calling stuff isn't working anymore. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim Wildman with Jeremy Wiggins and Walker Wildman. You can watch us at Facebook Live. Also, we have a studio cam at Facebook Live, and Walker's posting all the articles that we talk about here. Hey, wanted to get Abe Hamilton in here, Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for American Family Association, to talk about something I found very interesting last week. Abe, you were talking about what there's something that Donald Trump, he made an intentional effort to reach out to the African-American community, and he even spoke about, he's talked about wanting to improve the plight and lives of people in the inner city. And you told me last week, having grown up African-American in the inner city in New Orleans, mm-hmm. that there's one thing that Donald Trump could promote that may be would make a huge difference, right?
Absolutely. And what I shared with you is something that I was pleased to see is included in his 100 days, his plan to pursue in terms of agenda items within the first 100 days of his presidency would be to advocate for a policy that would allow school choice in the country. And it's something that I think will cut against or cut across all partisan lines. It's something that everybody will recognize as something that can be immediately done to address the condition. Most people recognize that one of the best ways to make the transition out of poverty into a more successful life for yourself is through education. And by President Trump taking the stance that he would advocate for policies that would allow the tax dollars that American citizens already pay, that already at this point go to public schools per child, allow those same dollars to follow the student as directed by the parent, that's one of the things that can be done immediately to aid the lives of those who are in cities and in places where their children have been sentenced to failing public schools.
Okay, this when you talk about this kind of idea, it begs the question, why hasn't this been done before? It seems like to me, President Obama, for example, and the liberals, why wouldn't they be for more choices that would improve the lives of inner city kids.
And here's the irony of your question. One of the first things President Obama did as president was to cancel the Washington, D.C. vouchers program that would allow Washington, D.C. parents to get a voucher from the federal government for their tax dollars to send the child to whatever school they would want to go to. The president cancels that program while his children are going to the best private schools in Washington, D.C. And he also—
That doesn't make any sense. Tell me exactly why that happens.
And this is why it happens. The way things work currently in the public education system, teachers have a percentage of their paychecks that automatically are deducted that go toward the teachers' unions. The teachers' unions, like the National Education Association, are a part of the unholy alliance of Democrat politics. What the teachers' unions do with that money is that they support liberal, progressive, and Democrat candidates and policies, and you have this, you scratch my back, I scratch your back. Mm-hmm. So the Democrat politicians oppose anything that could result in a reduction in the amount of students attending public schools because they really don't care about the students. Right. They care about the teachers' unions. Mm-hmm. And so you have, though these people know these schools are failing, though these people know that they continue to fail, they're more concerned with keeping an enlarged amount of public school teachers so that they can have a larger amount of money going to the public school teachers' unions. And it has nothing to do with the children. It has everything to do with the teachers' unions. Whereas if President Trump would take this policy and enact it, it would allow for the tax money that's already being used to be used as directed by the parent to go to any public school, charter school, private school, or home school that the parents would choose
to pursue. Trump has said he's for that?
Trump has said he's for that and would push for legislation following that policy.
You know, Abe, typically conservatives get the race card thrown at them quite a lot. And I'm just sitting here thinking about this. So let me work through this here a little bit. So the conservative principle of school choice would be poorer minority students in low-income areas would be able to go to better schools outside of mm-hmm. these minority low-income areas. But the progressive agenda wants to keep low-income minority students with other low-income minority students permanently, but conservatives
in failing
have to,
schools.
Yeah, in failing schools. So conservatives are racist. I don't understand that. How maybe you could explain to me how I'm missing something.
I can't,
here.
And you can't understand that. That's why you have to make a difference between a propaganda campaign and actual facts on the ground. Because this is not new. Wherever you find attempts to pursue school choice all over the country, it's always Democrats that oppose it. And it's for that very same reason. The Democrat politicians oppose it because they see, wait a minute, we know people will have a mass exodus, kind of like Moses through the Red Sea, from these failing schools. And so they don't want to do that because the way it works is that the failing schools are funded based on the number of students that attend them. So if you reduce the number of students in the schools, then you have to reduce the number of teachers. The less teachers in these failing schools, the less amount of money that goes into the teachers' unions. And then you have the teachers' unions, Democrat politicians' connection will be broken.
Yeah, this is inserting – school choice is inserting the capitalist idea into school, into where you go to school.
Competition.
The schools that provide better teaching, better atmosphere, and better results will get more students. The schools, they're lazy and they have low expectations and they don't get anything done, the students will leave those schools.
Right.
And so it will naturally encourage all schools and all teachers to do a better job.
Yes. And also think about if you're that mom or parents and you're trapped in the inner city of Chicago or Los Angeles or New Orleans or Atlanta or somewhere, and you see an opportunity where your child could go to a better school, maybe even a private school or a charter school that would give them a much better opportunity at success in life, graduating, going on to college, not to mention a safe environment in which to go to school. But you're denied that.
Mm-hmm.
You're denied that, and you're told, no, your child must go to this school right here. And even though that school is unsafe or has a low academic performance record, so this opens up, you're saying, Walker, a world of opportunity for these families and kids. And that's why Abe says, should President Trump promote this, as he said he would in his campaign, it could be a game changer in the African-American community. And you could see, you know, people coming behind Donald Trump because they see him as a champion of inner city kids.
Absolutely. And you have to understand what's happening. You have, for the first time in recent history that anybody can remember, President-elect Trump now, when he was candidate Trump, appealing as a Republican to inner city communities.
Right.
That hadn't happened before in recent memory. Mm-hmm. So there are lots of people that are now, well, let's see if he's really going to do what he said he's going to do.
Right.
If he comes through on this, this has the potential to change the political landscape.
Oh, yeah.
And not just the political landscape, but to change the lives of real people on the ground mm-hmm. immediately.
Yeah. This...
Hey, let me ask you this one question then, Walker, real quickly. How can he and a Republican Congress practically do this? Do they say to states, in order to get federal money for education, you have to allow for school choice?
That's one way you can do it. Or you can pass legislation that simply allows parents the portion of their federal tax money that are allocated per their child yeah. to their local public school to return to those families in the form of a voucher or a tax credit. Mm-hmm. There are lots of parents and lots of families. And I want to say this, too, because a lot of the charter schools and private schools, they're not even outside a lot of communities. Some of them are in the communities mm-hmm. and they're struggling, even though they're better schools,
right.
but they're struggling because of funding. Can you imagine what it
private.
Would do? Exactly.
Yeah,
can you imagine what it would do for those schools if these parents would be able to say, hey, I have this additional funds that come from my own tax money
right.
to be able to educate my child?
They can shop around.
They could shop around.
Yeah.
Some families who had made the decision to homeschool because of finances, they now would have a source that they've earned to provide resources for their families.
Yeah. So that's a threat to the secular progressive groups and the liberal agenda.
It is, because they've been able to have a stranglehold on this education system for so long that it's almost ready-made to produce secular progressive mindset.
Yeah,
so
gotcha.
In addition to the funding source, it's also an ideological threat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and one other thing I'll say is if Trump follows through with all these promises, which are great promises, most of them, we could very well be looking at a one-party country in about 8 or 10 years, because you'll begin to see folks in the African-American community will begin to flock to the Republican Party because they're seeing their communities
right.
become safer, all the criminals...
More opportunity.
And so the Democratic Party better figure something out, because if you build a wall and quit the illegal immigration,
yeah.
you provide school choice, you repeal Obamacare, and you do all these things... Who doesn't want that?
And yeah, the Democrat Party, quite frankly, has been shielded from criticism by President Obama's veto mm-hmm. over the last few years, and so they haven't had to answer the hard questions because they knew he would prevent them from having to have the argument or the discussion or the debate. For example, what Abe's talking about here, it's hard for a politician to get up and say, you know, who's with me in opposing school choice? Who's with me in keeping these kids trapped in these bad schools? Everybody raise their hand and let's go to Washington. And mm-hmm. no, that's contrary to common sense, and that's contrary to what people see as justice, as giving people the opportunity. So, but if you never have to have the discussion, that's the best thing to do. That's why, same thing with funding of Planned Parenthood. Democrats don't want to get up there and talk about abortion and why the government should keep funding abortion. So it's better that President Obama, for example, keep them from ever having to have the argument mm-hmm. in the first place. So a lot of these issues, I think the majority of Americans use common sense and are with us, with conservatives for
yeah.
the most part, constitutionalists. And it'll be interesting to see, because President-elect Trump has said he's going to promote school choice. Well, he has the opportunity. He has the House and the Senate. And if they do this, it's going to be a big, you said, a potentially a game changer in the African-American community on how they view Republicans.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you, Abe.
No problem.
Abe Hamilton, public policy analyst for the American Family Association. You going to hang around, or you got to go somewhere, Jeremy?
I can hang around.
Okay, we got George Barnum coming up, and we're going to talk to very interesting stuff coming out post-election. Again, some more analysis of what happened, especially with the Christian community. So we'll talk to George Barnum about that after the break. Stay with us.
The The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.